The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Once again, to be flabbergasted by the rolling tongue, the juggling of words, thoughts, and phrases, like a Spaniard on a tightrope, here is the one, the only, the man of 2 hours, Frank Cottolo.
And on the 364th day, when God was bored and simply trying to use up all his spare leftover parts, he said, I need someone to get up at 3:30 in the morning with a big mouth and a small amount of common sense. So God made a DJ. He said, I need someone who always knows the time and the temperature, the latest internet rumor, and what time the band takes the stage. So God made a DJ. I need someone willing to give caller number 8 a pair of tickets to the Herpes Simplex 12 screen, to spend their Saturdays handing out pizza to used car salesmen, and to ask every single caller what station's doing it for you. So God made a DJ. I need someone whose voice and face don't match, like the roar of a lion coming out of the butt of a chihuahua. So God made a DJ. I need someone who can say with a straight face that Nickelback is their favorite band, to ask you for the phrase that pays, and then inform you that you're listening to the hot rockin', flame-throwing, booty-kicking, steamrolling, corn-shucking tower of hit music power that's shaking the lakes and rocking the docks. So God made a DJ. Sweet. He's a maestro of sexual innuendo, a virtuoso of the fart sound effect, and he or she is always doing it with you, to you, and for you, right up until the big hour of 10 o'clock or beyond. Yes, God made a DJ so that one day when your child comes to you and says, when I grow up, I want to be a doctor, a lawyer, a policeman, a carny, a clown, or a mime, you will have someone else to point to and say, just so you don't end up like that. And that's why God made a DJ.
Train compartments smell vaguely of shit. It gets so you don't mind it. That's the worst thing that I can confess. You know how long it took me to get there? A long time. When you die, you're gonna regret the things you don't do. You think you're queer? I'm going to tell you something. We're all queer. You think you're a thief? So what? You get befuddled by a middle-class morality, get shut of it. Shut it out. You cheat on your wife? You did it. Live with it. Fuck little girls? So be it. Is an absolute morality? Maybe. And then what? If you think there is, go ahead, be that thing. Bad people go to hell? I don't think so. You think that? Act that way. Hell exists on Earth? Yes. I won't live in it. That's me. Did you ever take a dump, made you feel like you just slept for 12 hours? Good night. Yes. I'm telling you, I'm in bed. And it's she got
Look out.
That's a control over there. You know what I mean?
I'm just saying. Broadcasting now takes the microphone and owns it completely and entirely. Neo-postmodernists, you wind-burned sicklemen of February weary, come hither from the harrow, from the furrow, and the harrow, and the harry, and the home, and hey, helmets and face masks not required. Here we go, another monkey-piloted trip to the moon, with me, Frank Atolo. Man whose name adorns the title of the stinking show. I am not a disc jockey. Wake up, it's too late. It's too late? Wake up, it's night. Oh, my God. Mice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello, I invite you in to my den of inequity. Are you equal here? No. He's watching you. Whatever you do, he's the third man. He's me, Frank Atolo. And his name adorns the title of this show, Atolo Chronicles, now Y2K plus 13. Logging in on the 14th of February, commonly known as St. Valentine's Day. So welcome one and welcome all. We're live through the facilities of SRN1, and with gratitude to all of our affiliate stations who trust and believe in this show, and so they play it over and over again, because the third man is here. Look out, let's all. Your luck, your smarts, your guts, and your hearts. Let's all dance to it, baby. Dance to it, yeah. Yes. Greece hasn't fallen yet for all the shifts. I am here to help you keep your balance. Yes? Stay with me. Because no matter what happens, you'll never get out of this world alive. We got 2 hours, less than that, as we chronicle. This is all about you, your species, you and me, tonight, this morning, this afternoon, whenever you're listening. Someone said to me, I was very young. I mean, what is very young to me, you're saying? Because, you know, you're not exactly a spring chicken, as they used to say. All the things they used to say coming back to me at my ripened age? No, I'm not. No. I have not yet begun to spring to my best. I'm still bouncing about. I'm still the virile Bugs Bunny that I was back when I jumped around the streets of Melrose Avenue and Hollywood Boulevard, Vine Street. I'm still Bugs Bunny. I'm still here. But someone, when I was way young, now you said, what's way young? I don't know. You know, impressionably young. When are you impressionably young? You should be impressionably young, according to Dr. Gary Popoli, who's always telling us about this. Youngins, impressionably young at 7, 8, 9, 10, you're starting to get cognitive, even though your frontal cortex is not developed, but it's developing slowly, and you're impressionable. When people say things to you, especially adults, at around that time, you hear these things and you take them to heart because these are big people. These are grown-up people walking around. They do things you can't even imagine. They leave in the morning, get in a big machine. They drive somewhere. They come back at night. Sometimes in the afternoon, whatever, I don't know. But they, you know, they do things you can't imagine. They used to put little white sticks in their mouth and light them. I mean, they did these incredible. You're impressionable. You are accessible. You are absorbing tons of things. So at that age, imagine somebody says to you this. Someone comes up to you and says, hey, kid, life's a bitch and then you die. And you, this is not exactly Santa Claus stuff, okay? This is not Burl Ives singing, there's a little white duck. It wasn't a white duck. It's a brown duck. There's a little brown duck. It's like I'm getting a signal from somewhere. I don't know, something. But imagine you're just a kid and someone says that to you. I'm not a specialist in child relations or adult to child relations. I'm not a specialist in relations. I'm from the, what was that line in the Woody Allen movie? When it comes to me, my relationships are more like an August Strindberg play. Hey, by the way, when I mention names like that and you go, well, I can't laugh at that because I don't know what you're talking about, Frank, that's time to take out your Cthulhu Chronicles notebook and write it down. I said August Strindberg. So now, if you don't know August Strindberg, you should be writing down August Strindberg. But let's go back to what I said when I said, imagine you're this age and someone says to you, life's a bitch and then you die. And this concept, this is a very similar concept to what happened to me in Catholic school. I wasn't in Catholic school, but I went to these religious instructions. They took us out of grade school and brought us to this weird place called the church or the Catholic. I don't know. It took us to this Catholic school, which was inside a church, blah, blah. And then, you know, the entire theme, the theme of school changed radically when you went from a public school and then got shoved into a religious center, especially Catholic. I can't speak for any other ones. I never went to any ones. For all I know, there were Catholic schools, there were Jewish schools, but I don't think kids went to Jewish schools the way kids went to parochial schools and Catholic schools back in those days. But in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event as I'm speaking, it was very much like that. You know, you're young, very young and impressionable, and a nun, a Catholic nun, takes a ruler and onto one of a big standing in front of a large metal desk. And these weren't little cheap things back in those days. We're talking thick wood, a metal desk. I said, because it's got a metal top to it, you know, and it's just heavy. It's very heavy. It took a tractor and a forklift to get this thing into the room. And that's just the nun. No. And I mean, the desk. And she takes the ruler, and from the top, she's holding the ruler above her head, and she brings the ruler down. This is like a fast and quick movement, so that the ruler, and this is not a ruler, I'm sorry, this is a yardstick. A yardstick. No, I don't even know if you could buy a yardstick anymore. And schools, I don't know, I haven't been in one for a while. Public schools or any kind of school, do they have yardsticks? Why would you have a yardstick? I don't know. Why would you measure a yard with a yardstick? And he's like, I have a ruler, that 12-inch real foot, you know, and takes the ruler and slams it, slaps it. I'm talking about a slap, not a slam. A slap of that ruler, this wooden ruler. It's only like a quarter of an inch wood thick. But it hits that hard wood top, metal top desk with a smack like you wouldn't believe it. It's startling. It sends chills up your spine. It puts your nerves right to the edge of blowing up, or whatever nerves do, crack to nerves crack. And here she is, and these kids are 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever these kids are, young, impressionable kids, looking at this lady dressed in black and white. I have no idea what's going on. And she smacks that thing down, and before the echo is finished, before it stops ringing in your ear and going right into, it rings on either side of the ear, meets in the middle of your head as if it smacks and collides so that your eyes almost pop out. And she says, loudly, God was, God is, and God always will be. Nice a bitch, and then you die. These are concepts. How do you get these concepts at that age, at this impressionable age? How do you take those and absorb them? What do you do? How do you process that? And so I think about these things, because the conflicts that happen at that age continue to happen in your life, and over and over and over again when you get older, because you have these moments. You're not as impressionable, but you're also always affected by the base impressions. So those base impressions are going on there, right? So let's say then you're like in your 40s, and now you understand, and somebody can say life's a bitch and then you die. And it, you know, what does it mean? Well, it means probably the same that it meant when it impacted you the first time. So you hear it. But now you're 40, you've had experiences in life, you've had relationships, whatever has gone on in your life. And certainly by 40, if you make it there healthy, you've been through some stuff, okay? So what are you hit with? You're hit with almost the same exact feeling, but now you feel it at a different level, maybe even deeper, because you understand how much closer you are to dying. I mean, it's a reality now. It's not just this fantasy. It's not that quick because you've got 40 years behind you. This can happen at 35, but it can happen at 32, can happen at 28. I don't know. Maybe it happens after your cortex, this frontal cortex, is developed, 29, 30. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not making this up as I go along. I'm just thinking about it as I go along. And that's why you're listening to me think about it. Write it down. Think about it. Write, dish it down. And think about it. Because they're probably, now that might not have been the thing, but I guarantee you sometime in your adolescence, an elder said something to you that sounded so absurd, and yet it made an impression upon you. You know, I went home the day that nun said to me, and, you know, smashed that sound of the ruler, making that point, punctuating it with violence, punctuating the eternal life of the infinite, a point about infinity that no one can handle, no less an 8-year-old. I went home that day, and my mind was spinning, because I literally, at that age, tried to make sense of this, which is this. Always, was always, is I understand, was always, well, all I know always when I'm 8 is I don't even remember when I start knowing things, my consciousness, but it's way before that, and always will be, which means I don't even have any idea of how far down the path that, I have no concept, I have no perception, I can't put this into place. I can't put this into, I have no frame of reference. And I think that as we get older, we find little frames of references, and yet it goes back to that. It goes back to those moments when adults are figureheads, figures, our authority figures, all these people who we kind of admire because they do things like get into big machines and drive them around, you know, and put white things in their mouth, big black things, and light them, and they control fire, they control electricity. These are like gods, you know, in a way. And so it's amazing how, and later on in life, and the later it gets in life, you find that these things still affect you. Maybe at a different level, but you have more of a frame of reference. And recently someone said, life's a bitch and then you die. And I realized that it's like, well, you know, the dying part, regardless, I don't know what you believe, I don't, you know, but I mean, the dying part is the end of, let us say end of life, forget about everything else, end of life as we know it, because either way, it is the end of life as we know it. And but now you have all these years before, and it seems like nothing. Because it's just life's a bitch. That's it. That's it. There's no, you don't go in, but you go and you say to yourself, well, wait a second. Then you think, you have reference, you have a frame of reference, and frames of references are very important in terms of how you see things so that you could balance those things as you get older. I know I try to. I fail miserably every time. But do I try? Yeah, because I have no choice. Now, I can't say every time, because then I sound like the guy who just says life's a bitch and then you die. It's not true. Sometimes I succeed, and the slightest bit of success is, it's not just encouraging, it's enlightening. And although I don't portend to enlighten anybody who listens to Cotolo Chronicles, and that's what this is. I'm Frank Cotolo, man whose name is the title of this show. Although I don't portend to enlighten anyone, I do massage the parts, I hope to massage the parts of the brain which spark the emotions and make you sit back and go, I wonder. Because when you stop wondering, then you're dead. And I think that the topic we're going to talk about, because here I am talking about saying, like, you know, when you're young and impressionable, and then you're like, make you 40, and in that time you live, you change, you evolve. And we're going to be talking about the sense of evolution, because aside from the fact that, you know, while people are out there doing the commercial stuff, what's the commercial stuff? The commercial stuff, would be, the commercial stuff would be, Valentine's Day, you know, cards and love. It's all good stuff. I'm not saying, you know, there's anything bad about it. That's all. But while they're doing that, you also must know that the same week that Valentine's Day takes place and all the candy and the sweets and the love and the hearts and the flowers go about, the same week is the birthday celebration of Charles Darwin, the man who grew this gigantic beard, the weirdest looking guy you ever want to see. He didn't look anything like, I don't know who played him. No one ever played him in the movies that I remember, but you know, the very famous monkey trials, which tested in court the theories of evolution by Charles Darwin. And of course, every single year, no matter how technology improves, no matter what happens, there's people who just don't understand it and don't want to believe it or understand it, believe it. Maybe because when they were younger, maybe that, you know, there was someone else figuring that, and that's what happens. You know, the young and impressionable, these things come about, but anyway, Mr. Darwin only becomes the subject of what we're going to talk about because of an article which talks about, and we're going to go through the whole article here as we usually do. So get out your notebooks, pieces of paper, whatever it is you need to do. Maybe you have one of those little things you talk into and you make verbal notes, or you can listen to the show. And of course, later on, you can go download the show again or listen to it on any of the many affiliates that play it again. And you can learn more about, not learn more, you can listen more. And the things that you miss, you can catch and then look into them more deeply. The surprising ways humans continue to evolve. It's way, way, way far from over as a race. The species of mankind will continue into, we don't know where or when or why, but things are changing. Things are happening. They're all part of your life. And of course, this fits right into everything we've ever done on this show. Starting with the invention of broadband, but with the institution of broadband and internet radio, and getting on the stage of this theater and getting into how things have changed due to the digital platform. Now, man, all those things that we've talked about over the years that are affecting mankind, also affecting the evolution of mankind. What's happening to us? And how are we changing from those impressionable times, and how each generation turns over? That's the stuff. But I'm going to get into that in a while. But first, as always, let's sell a book.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky Escapades. Parallel Universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
I believe that even though that Kindle, I think you can, there's something that you can, you can, did you like that? You want to get people to hear that instrument? That orchestra, please? Yeah. You could get a License to Skill at Amazon and get it as a digital piece, put it on your phone, a Kindles. I know there's ways that people do that. They get digital files and somehow can do it on their iPhones. And look, if you say you got a smartphone, it's not so smart if you can't read a License to Skill, because... Thank you. I got to keep those guys here. I got to keep those guys playing that song. Let's talk about this stuff, because you're like me. If you're like me, and I know you are in a way, because you're a walking, talking
combustible set network of nerves and things. You're a human. And although I've been called a lot worse in my life, we shall go into this and see where it takes us. See, I'm going to take out my pen and pencil and go into this. Where's that other pen I want to use? Here's one right here. I'm a writer. I always give credit to anybody who writes these things that we riff off of. Man, I didn't want to say that. We riff through these particular thoughts and words. Brandon Keim, I hope I'm saying his name right, K-E-I-M, Keim, who has written for Wired. And you know that we talk many times about Wired magazine. You know, when you talk about magazines, of course, there aren't many. I mean, magazines are just going, they're going the way of all flesh, which I think, in a sense, is also a biblical. Isn't that the way of all flesh? I think that's a biblical phrase, but let's not give credit to that. That's too much. Wired exists and is a wonderful magazine. They also have Wired.com. You can get further into the articles on their archives or what have you. But this particular one struck me, and I want to get into it. Then I'm going to tell. Let me tell you this now, though, before we go into it. There, and that is that the next week, which would be the 21st of February. We're still attempting, and we're trying as hard as we can to get Tom Savino on this show with me, my former radio partner in business and in broadcasting on mic. Goes way back to the beginnings of radio, far, 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 far away from most of you people would even know this year. That exists. It did once happen. If we can get him on, it should be a very, very fun reunion for me and Tom, talking about all sorts of things. And he's a marvelous wit, quick, funny, dry, and he's a great as all partners tend to be an influence upon you as you are an influence upon them. So we'll try to do that. The CatoloChronicles.blogspot.com, Twitter, all the other places, Facebook, Frank Catolo, all the places where you can get me. We will let you know what happens with that. Also, we want to send out get wells to Heather Drain, who's still just had this horrible, horrible illness, virus thing that is just knocking her completely out. She's going to be on the show again as we go probably into March. You know, we're already going to looking at spring here, which is amazing because of time just flying by. As always. But anyway, in all events, and certainly in this event, let's look at Brandon Keim's article, The Surprising Ways Humans Continue to Evolve, Evolution. Let's go through this. I'll read it, and we'll have our sidebars and talk about things that come to our mind while we're doing it. Here's, and I'll tell you what I'm quoting. Quote. I'll do that. Quote. Okay. It's easy to think humans have stopped evolving, but nothing could be farther from the truth. Not further, but farther. Okay, further and farther. They're two different things. You want to look them up, you do it. You know, it's not an English lesson. I'm sorry. What can I tell you? Life's a bitch and then you die. No, let's go on here. Though modern medicine and civilization's graces make the struggle to survive more subtle, that's a wonderful sentence. The struggle to survive is more subtle than ever, based on technology. And that's because, you know, we don't have to go hunting for our food. We don't have to build our own little place. We have electricity. We have all these things. That's civilizations. I love that. Modern medicine, civilization's graces. The graces, they're all created by man, by the way. You know we're going to need something to sit in, to stay in because it rains. And they build the houses and things. Okay. But evolution's engine keeps churning. And, remarkably so, in the last few thousand years, a time when human evolution was once thought to have slowed, that's over. says Brandon. It may actually have sped up. Charles Darwin, as I mentioned, was born the same week as Valentine's Day. And then he was born in 1809. So imagine that. Now, before 1809, and this is how revolutionary evolution was at the time. I mean, think about it. 1809. I mean, I'm talking about when I was talking about being a youngster in the 50s, and the Catholic Church is this incredible force in the world. And of course we just saw what happened with the Pope resigning and the ripples with the modern religion and all. I mean, everything's, you know, shaken up. It's all getting shaken up, all part of man evolving as far as I'm concerned. But Charles Darwin, according to Brandon, I'm just going to call him Brandon, okay? Brandon says, would be pleasantly surprised about what's happening to the human species these days. The father of evolution what did he do? Didn't talk much about the human implications of his theory. You see, you're going to learn some stuff now about Darwin. If you don't know this, and you don't know what I meant when I was talking about the monkey trials, write the dish down. Why do I, and those of you who listen to the show know why I changed my voice when I said, write the dish down. I'm imitating Dr. Fabianic, a wise and crazy professor of physics that I had in college. Yes, I did go to college, but I didn't learn much. Don't worry about that. Okay. Here. Charles Darwin didn't talk much about human implications of his theory. Here's a quote from Charles Darwin. Light will be thrown on the origin of man and his history, he said. He didn't say that. He wrote it. He might have said it also, but I don't know who heard it. His book, in 1859, so he's, 50 years old. He's born in 1809. 1859, he writes this groundbreaking book, The Origin of Species. The origin of species. This really set the race afire. If you could think right now and imagine what it would be like if, in fact, we did get some kind of proof that there was a life on another planet and a being or something came here. Imagine if something like that actually happened. How that would upset the apple cart. Even now, in this day and age. And imagine what it did back then. 1859, this book comes out. I don't know who published it or why it happened, but On the Origin of the Species. He left it to scientists like Thomas Huxley to make the full and then controversial case for humanity's origins. And those origins, of course, were to be... as he said, we were ancestors of apes. Our evolution came from apes. Of course, many people still today goes, why are there still apes? You know, but I'm not going to get into that or the right and wrong of it. I'm going to just talk about it as if all things being equal, let's look at what happened because there's indisputable things involved in this. Do you notice? I feel like I'm living in an apartment house. And because there's like, I'm doing this show. I don't have these soundproof things. So it'll happen. Here, let me just do this one thing. Holy, don't go away, everybody. Just stay right there. We're just going to do something. We can still talk. We can still be on. And we'll do wonderful things. There you go. It's soundproof now. We just soundproofed it. closing the door. Because like me, there are people in this enclosure, in this abode, in this house, this realm, this England. And I'm still healing. Like there's all sorts of sounds going. It's like I got an antenna and all sorts of junk. It's like I'm not fine-tuned on a radio. Okay. But it won't bother me because I'll just move on. Only with The Descent of Man, another book that was published in 1871 for audiences that had finally wrapped their heads around what Darwin was saying about evolution, tackling its existence. Though much of the book focused on the importance of mate preferences to shaping traits, Darwin speculated in one section that humankind's altruistic tendencies may have changed our evolutionary trajectory. That's which way we're going, right? Giving people who would once have died a chance to reproduce. I don't, as I read this, understand that sentence at all. I don't read this stuff beforehand. I'm not like those guys who have people, you know, on the talk shows, they have people on, and they go, oh, yeah, I read your book, and I think it's absolutely fantastic. And I don't know how they even read the book from one time to the next, in a week. I don't know how they do that. And I don't know how they get through some of those books, because they have to have the guests on. The guests are promoting the book, and the people, the talk show host, is talking. They may hate it, but he has no choice but to find little things maybe he likes about it and talk about it. I don't read these things. I get a general idea of what's going on, and then I go into it, because it's all about that. That's how I evolved, at least. But this particular thing I didn't understand that at all. But he has two books, of course, The Origin of the Species and The Descent of Man. Descent, descending. I think it probably has to do with generations, and that's why. But anyway, that type of reasoning about humankind would lead to a widely held view that human evolution had slowed or even stopped. That's what that meant. And I didn't get that, but maybe you didn't. The point is, right back to the beginning of the article, Brandon is saying most people think it's slowed. Evolution is slowed. We don't have these changes. We don't see them rapidly. But, you know, it's kind of like, I think, it would be kind of like when you have a kid and he grows up and you just don't recall seeing him grow. You don't see him grow. We have a puppy. You get a puppy. And the next thing you know, the doggone thing is running around the house with legs that are like two feet long, and he's slobbering. And maybe it's a he, maybe it's a she, I don't know. But I mean, it was just a little puppy who was sitting in your lap. And then suddenly it's this big, you don't remember, you don't see it grow. You don't see yourself grow. You don't see yourself age. It just happens. One day you look in the mirror and you go, holy crap, look what happened. So human evolution, of course, he's saying, has gone a lot faster. And it seems now, research over the last several decades, and in particular the last few years, this is what makes this important, because that's what we're going to get into, have led to a different view. Human evolution is still going strong. We're changing even as we speak. Even as we speak right now, things are changing. You're changing. I'm changing. And that's it. So let's get back to what Brandon wrote here. He writes, he might have said it and then wrote it, but he's writing it here. Humanity hasn't yet spawned X-Men style superheroes, but there's a kernel of truth to the comic book trope of unknown powers latent in humanity's masses. He says, over the last 10,000 years or so, human populations have grown from a few million to more than 7 billion. Every successful fusion of sperm and egg carries a few brand new mutations. Think about this. Mutations. So there's changes. That's just changes. Now you say mutate, and you think of mutant, and you think of ugly or crazy. We're just talking about changes. Okay? And these can be microscopic. They are microscopic. What am I talking about? These aren't, so the population, and that's a population explosion. If you think about a few million to 7 billion, that's gigantic. That's heroic. That's, heroic's not the word, but I'll say it. It's astronomical. Let's say it's meteoric. How about that? I like that word, meteoric. It's meteoric. Every successful fusion of sperm and egg carries a few brand new mutations, new things that are different. The population explosion means that humanity is awash with new mutations. We're going to use the word mutation now as a change in something about the species, the raw material of the species. When it started out in ape land, in Apeland, in Apeland, which of course, I'm referring now, of course, to the original book on the Origin of Species. And when Darwin called it Apeland, he didn't call it Apeland. But when it started out, of course, there was, you could see the changes, because now you look back and you go, oh, you're a man with hair, four, walking on four, to walking upright, to walking on twos, and the next thing, you know, doing a mambo. That's all. And what a vast change from walking on fours to doing a mambo. That's a gigantic evolutionary jump. What a leap of evolutionary faith or something. It's amazing. So little by little, because every sperm and egg, and anywhere along the line, I imagine, something can spark a gigantic change. We did a show, I don't know how many years ago, and I'd love to replay it sometime if I could ever find it, because I don't file these things the way I should. We did a show about the part of history where Attila the Hun had become the Huns and the barbaric troop and tribe of Cossacks and whatever they were, these things that took over when the Roman Empire was knocked over and everything. And Attila the Hun and these guys started populating all of the people, the Italians and that was the center of the world, Rome, that whole area. So the idea was that we're all somehow connected to Attila the Hun in more ways than almost anyone, because that he was a gigantic populator, let's just say, and then we're all his friends and his sons and his, so the whole, and you don't realize, oh, we did that show, we'll do that show again. The point is that in those generations, what was happening was mutations. Things were changing. The blood line. The blood line, I guess, is the way we say it. I don't know. I didn't study any of this stuff. I'm just thinking it through. And I hope that inspires you to think through stuff. That's all. And I'm not like one of these guys. I'm not one of these guys who comes on to emancipate you, enlighten you, or save you from your sins. I'm not one of those guys. I like those guys. I watch them in the middle of the night. But that's a whole other story. You know, it is not a whole other story. I want to stop for a second and tell you that the other night I got to do something with Peter Popoff. I mean, just the name, Peter Popoff. This guy just drives me nuts. I'm not crazy about him. I don't like him as an evangelist like I love Robert Tilton, who has disappeared again. I don't know. You've either gone to jail or Canada. One of those two places. No, jail, Canada, or Liechtenstein. Liechtenstein used to be the place everybody used to go when you were a complete rebel. I think Yuri Gagarin, he was an astronaut. I'm talking about Idi Amin went to Liechtenstein, and the other guys, all these guys got thrown out of power. They went to Liechtenstein, and that was a place to go. So anyway, what was I saying? Where did they go? Who was that I was talking about? I don't know. The idea was this. The idea that we were moving right along here in some fashion, human evolution, that's in that respect. As I continue to, I wasn't as distracted as I seem to be in certain ways, but you have no idea what is going on around me. So I'm trying to do this without any particular pointing out of this. But anyway, let's go back to what we were talking about. Anyway, the mutations. Let's go back to mutations, because for God's sake, God knows this room is filled with mutations right now. I can tell you that much. Let's go back to humanity, the mutations. So again, I think you've got the idea now how it changes. I just don't want you to, you know, go around quoting me. You know, the worst thing you want to do is tomorrow, you want to meet somebody because you're interested in what I was saying, and talk and say you heard it on this show, and then mention my name as if I'm some kind of expert in this. I'm not an expert. I don't know anything about this stuff other than what I know, the little things I know about it, and how I explain it. And now I'm explaining it and thinking it through by talking to you about it. Okay, so now we go back here. The new mutations. Humanity is awash with new mutations from wherever the blood flows. Okay? All right. So the image that we're talking about is a graphic representation. I'm going back to Brandon's text now. The image is a graphic representation of genetic patterns, genetic genes. I haven't mentioned the word genes. Okay, that's because we're not sponsored by Shortstop anymore. I'm talking about genes, stuff that's in the genes, the things, the little things, and that by no means is a technical term. The little things inside of your blood and your DNA that and your corpuscles that continue to decide your traits, and if you got a long nose, a big nose, a short nose, or if you look like a Cossack or Attila the Hun or whatever the case might be, those genetic patterns that change and are mutated, okay? This graphic depicts a population-wide tabulation genetic variations collectively present in each part of the human genome. This sentence will now be erased from this article. I hate it. It's a horrible sentence, and I don't know what he's talking about. So let's think of, listen to this. It depicts, listen to this sentence. Brandon, I love you wherever you are. I'm not criticizing your writing. I'm trying to use your article here as the foundation of this particular discussion about, and I haven't even gotten to the fact that man is evolving to prove your point. But with sentences like this, this just knocks me right off of my chair. It depicts a population-wide tabulation genetic variations collectively present in each part of the human genome. Is that genome? Is that how you say that? Genome? Genon? Genome. How about genome? G-E-N-O-M-E. Genome. Genome? Genome? One of them sounds Italian. The other one sounds just stupid. Genome. It depicts a population. Do you know what this sounds like? This sounds like one of those things they give you in school. Or not in school. In acting school. In acting school, you could say this. Don't even have to know what it means. But it helps your pronunciation. And it helps you say things when you have lines. Especially in theater, where you have to talk to an audience. I know that in movies there's an audience, but you don't talk to an audience in movies. But listen to this. It depicts a population-wide tabulation genetic variations collectively. Oh, no, I'm doing it like my father. I have to take a breath. Hold on a second. I have to take a breath here because I did learn how to do this. And I did some acting and, of course, some singing. What all has to do with the breath, okay? And breath comes to the species almost naturally because without it, we're not a species. We don't breathe. We die. And life's a bitch, and then you die. Listen, it depicts a population-wide tabulation genetic variations collectively present in each part of the human genome or genome. Now we just walk past that, okay? And this, again, this is the same thing I was talking about from the beginning. If someone come up and say that to you, and listen, that someone come up and say that to you, someone come up. If someone came up and said that to you, and you were like 8, wow, what an amazing, wonderful person, this large man or woman who's saying this to me. You're gigantic. You're wonderful. I'm going to remember that. I don't know what it means, but I'm going to remember it. It has an effect on you, okay? But here's the deal, okay? Some mutations, all he's trying to say is this, and I learned this now just by reading this over and over again and saying it as if I was an actor. Now, look at what he said. Imagine if you said it like an actor, and you know what, because a lot of lines you say, like people try to interpret Shakespeare because English was English. It's just the way they spoke, but today we don't speak like that. And, of course, the poetry is thrown into it, so people... Actors say, you know how many actors are out there doing Shakespeare? They don't know what the hell they're talking about. But the sound of it, just like in poetry, the sound as you speak, the rhythm, the sound, it depicts a population-wide tabulation genetic variations collectively present in each part of the human genome. You say, it sounds like you know what you're talking about. See, it's easy. It's easy. You can fool some of the people some of the time, and that just may be enough. See, as long as you get the amount that you can do with that, and I'm 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 astounded. I'm, you know what it is? That was a moment of evolution. I'm evolving even as we speak, and that's what's happening. Let's go back to this before we take this break. We're going to have to take this break to replenish our precious bodily fluids and to dispose of bodily wastes and do whatever it is we have to do. And then we're going to come back and talk more about this. And you're saying to yourself, what are we talking about? Are we talking about Attila the Hun? Are we talking about genes? Are we talking about life being a bitch? Are we talking about death? Are we talking about religion? What are we talking about? We're talking about all of it because it's all there. It's a cauldron of all these thoughts and ideas. That's why you come here. That's why I chronicle. And Brandon Kim, whose name I'm probably saying incorrectly, has done this article. Here's the deal. We're all evolving. This show has already evolved from the beginning to now and then through it. It's going to even be different when it ends. Okay? We're talking about it's not a theory now. It's a fact. All of us, as a collective species, are evolving. You know, in science fiction, where you see the people, they say people have evolved, their heads get bigger because the brains get bigger. You know, the size of the brain has nothing to do with your intelligence. It's the workings. It's what you're using inside of the brain. It's how you're using, how much of it you're using. And then the size means nothing. Didn't we already prove that by explaining the Incredible Shrinking Man to you? And you're going, I don't know. I'm listening to this show for the first time and the last time. You're probably saying, if you don't know about that. More about that later. My name is Frank Atolo. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of this show. And we're chronicling what's happening. And it's very important because you're going to have kids, or you have kids, or they're going to have kids, and they're going to have kids. Hopefully, the generations are just going to continue to turn over one after another. And the sun will also rise, just as it said in the Bible, which has nothing to do with evolution. So you see how we can put all this together? We will. And that's what we do here. Scutolo Chronicles. When we're gonna take a little break, but I haven't even set that up. I got a terrible, terrible start today to doing this Thursday night ding that I do. Ding. That's what my friends do. Because my friends don't listen to the show. They hear enough of me. The people who listen to the show mostly are people who don't know me, and the people who do know me don't get the whole thing. They call this. You do that ding. That thing you do on Thursday night, this is that thing I do and have done. And that's, yes, I still do that thing on Thursday night. I walk into people, literally. I see them daily, not daily. I don't see everybody daily. But when I see people and they say to me, oh, you're here. It's did you do that thing? Did you do that thing? Yeah, I did that thing. This is just a thing I do. Okay, so now what I'm going to do now is try to get you some important messages that you need to hear. And I'm not nowhere near ready. As I said, I did not prepare as much as I should here this evening. And I'm looking for the various things that I'm going to play for you that will have that you know what you're not going to do? You're not even going to listen. See, this is great. This is what happens. The sponsors, and this is, we don't have sponsors. I mean, they're really paying sponsors. If we did that, then I would obviously be making money and care a lot more about what I was doing. But no, not that money is a motivation, but it can be. But that's just in my genes, and that's part of my evolution. But listen to this for a second. I'm saying that what happens is on the show comes the commercial or the break. Something happens, and they put on a public service announcement, or they put on a commercial. They tell you to buy something, to eat something, to take something, to watch out for something, to do something. All these things that are commercially broadcast, they do that, and then what do? You don't listen. You go to the bathroom. You make a sandwich. You don't even listen to it. You just move on. And so the things that I'm going to play right now that keep everybody that gives you time to go to the bathroom, which, by the way, I do add right now, is incredibly important to do compared to listening to these things. You want to go to the bathroom when you have to. You do not want to not go to the bathroom and listen to one of these things, even though I'm playing these things. And if you want to sit and listen to these things, or if you can hear them when you go to the bathroom, you may be able to hear them as you're going. You can hear it from where, you know, I have to literally leave the microphone and go to the bathroom to do it. You don't have to do that. You can listen to it under any circumstances. Now, I'm even deciding to do, I'm looking, yeah, I'm doing this right now. I'm putting these in place because I did not, as I said, I didn't get prepared. And I'm trying to do about three things at once because this is not an expensive show. It's not the kind of show where you, it's not the kind of show where we have, a whole bunch of, we have producers, we have a person putting, clicking buttons and getting ready. It's not that at all because we don't have those. This is internet radio. This is, for all due purposes, and these are the purposes, this is alternative broadcasting. And so, at this point, as I reach the top of the hour that we're going into after the first hour, I tell you to sit there or sit on your throne, go to the bathroom, do what you got to do, get yourself some beverage, come back, and we will be here.
The Dole Chronicles, the internet talk show from the neo-postmodern world.
Reading is dying out. A new champion emerges. Wacky escapades. Parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves the tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo. Now on Amazon for your Kindle.
Hi, I'm Julian Lennon. Are you in the band? Join me and band together for Lupus to support the Lupus Foundation of America and its efforts to provide research, education and support for all people living with lupus. Visit lupus.org to learn more about this chronic disease affecting 1.5 million Americans. And find out how to join the band today.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Don't be stupid with your skin. It's the only skin you're in. Know what's good and bad to do. Find the right and wrong for you. It's time you learn what it's about. 'Cause indoor tanning is out. UV lamps from a tanning bed, they can turn your skin beet red. Wrinkles come from the UV light, and age spots make you go frightful sight. With UV light, it gets worse. Skin cancer is a wicked curse. Don't be the one that's tanned dead. Use your brain, use your head. It's time you learn what it's about. 'Cause indoor tanning is out. A message from the American Academy of Dermatology.
Hi, this is the Jigman Freud, yes, better known as Jiggy Jaguar, reminding everyone within earshot that Frank Cotolo's new book, More Talk Memoirs, is now available at blurb.com. I know there is not one of you out there that ever trusts a word I say, but this time I mean it when I tell you that you will not be sorry. You're not going to be sorry when you buy and read More Talk Memoirs by Frank Cotolo. So go to blurb.com and buy a copy or two or more. You may regret knowing me, but you will never regret buying More Talk Memoirs.
Hey, girls, we know what's hot. When a guy respects a girl enough to ask and doesn't just try to make a move on us. We don't want to be pushed, pressured, or persuaded to have sex. We can make up our own minds. And when we say no, we mean no, not maybe or I need to be convinced more. It doesn't matter what we're wearing, what we've done in the past, or whether or not we said yes but then changed our mind. It's hot when guys respect our decision. If they don't and try to force groping or sex, it's illegal. That's right. Groping or sex without our permission is illegal. And any guy who tries to get away with it can get arrested for sexual assault. And that's on his record permanently. Hey, real men respect. And respect is hot.
Respect!
For information about sexual assault, log on to WCASA.org. That's WCASA.org. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault, the Wisconsin Department of Health and Family Services, and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Everybody's voting for the friendly voice of radio, the people's choice. Music, weather, sports, and news, it's radio, the people choose.
I don't ever want to have somebody turn on this show as a file or as a, I guess it's just a file, or listening live as we are. My name is Frank Cotolo, and the man whose name adorns the title of the show. This is Cotolo Chronicles Y2K plus 13 on a day that where people have sent flowers to loved ones or to people they want to love or people they should love, or they send flowers to themselves, or they do whatever they have to do. Send flowers. A big commercial day for flowers, Hallmark cards, and stuff for lovers of old, lovers of new, fresh love, old love, all this stuff that's going on. But I don't ever want anybody to switch on. Is it switch on, turn on, or listen? How about just listen? Because, and I think about this because when I play that PSA about radio, which is a very old, that's an old thing. There's, you know, there's no more radio. There's no more new music, weather, sports, and news. It's junk, you know, I mean, everywhere. And it's okay. I'm just saying that radio has changed. But the worst part about radio is what it has evolved, how it has evolved into a very specific, ego-mastered, neo-political junk box. And believe me, I put no thought into using that as a description. I'm just that when I'm driving somewhere at night and I turn on the local station, and it's a talk show. It's talk, I mean, you know, but it's not anywhere near balanced talk. It's agenda generated junk. You know, I don't usually go into this, but I mean, I just hate radio so much, and I'm from radio. I mean, I love radio so much, but I just hate it. I just hate what's going on. And now there are new people who are out there, and I don't care what they're espousing, the left, the right, the middle, the end. It's just garbage. There's no entertainment value at all, and I think that's like the number one thing that we should all know, whatever we do, talent-wise or not. And I just hate it. But here's what I really hate. The fact, not the fact that there's one show on with this particular guy or gal on, but I start turning the channel. Now, at nighttime, you can get radio stations from all over, because nighttime, the AM signal is flying through the air. It's bouncing off of things, and there's a lot of stations that are at a lower broadcasting rate than others, or 50 watts, the wattage goes down, and so you're hearing it. But here's what stinks. I'm driving along, and there's this guy, and you know, you must know him. I don't care. I'm not even going to mention him. And he's talking about his stupid politics stuff. And then, so I turn it. I don't want to listen to it. Okay, well, let go. God bless him and all the people who listen to him. But whatever you want to do is fine. And then I turn, I switch the station, and I get a station from another town, and it's him. And they're running the same show because the show is syndicated and it's on and he's live and they pick it up and it doesn't cost them anything. So then I go, all right, so that station. And then I swear to you that by the time I get from 500 on the AM band to way up 1680, 17, high on the band, which is the worst place that you could be broadcasting from, because the lower stations, by the way, the lower numbers, here's a little something you could know about radio you might not know. The lower numbers are where you get the most powerful stations. You go higher and higher and higher. They get littler, small, littler is not a, don't use littler. Don't ever use the word littler. They get smaller, the stations. And I swear to you, from 500 to like 1680, 1700, this guy is on seven stations. And it's like, this is stupid. This is just stupid. There's no reason for the lack of variety. There's no reason for the lack of voices. There's no reason, you know, I mean, whether I like to listen to this guy or not, and make it be known that if I did mention his name, I would tell you how much I want to punch him in the nose. But I also understand that's because, you know, he's doing an act. The thing I don't like is that, I don't want to talk about what I don't like. The point I'm trying to make here is that we need some variety here. All right? This happens in the afternoon, too, when Fat Boy Lonergan, I'll call him Fat Boy Lonergan. I think you know who I'm talking about. Fat Boy Lonergan is on at noon, and he's on seven stations across the AM band. This is just stupid. This is just stupid. Entertainment is variety. There should be things you like, things you don't like, things you agree, you don't agree. But, you know, this is stupid. This is what's happened to radio. It's been crushed. This is no evolution. It's gone backwards. If radio was a monkey, then radio right now is walking on all fours, where it used to stand up and walk through boldly, and that bothers me. I don't want anyone ever to turn this show on, if that's the phrase, and go, holy Christmas, it's like all the other ones. I don't care if I fumble, I don't care if there's a mistake, I don't care if I admit to stupidity, I don't care about any of this stuff. And he just bothers the living daylights out of me. And did you hear that? Was that a little bit of that? Living daylights out of me. Because I'm ready. You should see my fists, they're clenched. I want to punch all of those guys right in the nose. Fatty Lonergan, and I just made that fat man, fat boy Lonergan, whatever it is. And this is ridiculous gas bags. But that's okay. You could like and not like. But in the course of leaving, when there were disc jockeys, there was a radio station, and you would like this guy. Then one guy was on for 4 hours, and this guy was on for 3 hours, 4 hours. And he's, you know, I like that guy. I don't like that guy too much. I like that guy. And you'd listen. And there's a variety. No variety anymore. It's straight down the line garbage. Trash. It's a heap of turd. Now, with that in mind, let's continue talking about evolution and mankind as we do on this show, only as we do on this show, because this is the way we do it. The articles by Brandon Keem, The Surprising Ways Humans Continue to Evolve. I do not get any money from the magazine Wired, and they are not a sponsor, but I'll tell you who I like and what I like, and I like that magazine, and we get a lot of very different information from them, and they have a vast variety, and that's why I like it, variety of voices, and they're all new. This is all new, fresh stuff, people in the know of what's happening now. not people who want to turn the clock back. Some genetic analysis suggests that humanity doesn't just possess more new mutations, but evolution itself has picked up pace in the last 40,000 years. Sounds like a lot because you and I are not going to live anywhere near that far, but 40,000 years is a pinch in the roll of dough of that is time. Unexpectedly large portions of our genetic heritage contains genomic signatures of recent evolutionary pressure. Studies of these patterns don't make many specific claims about what the changes mean. The analytical methods were relatively low resolution, and the genetics of complex traits are poorly understood to begin with. But whatever is happening seems to be happening fast. Okay, thank you, Brandon. You're a smart guy, and you put together these complex sentences. It's wonderful. But what it's saying is the mutations, the things that are happening inside of the species that's making them change are happening a lot more rapidly than most of us care to believe or thought. I don't know if we care to believe. What do I got? I'm replenishing my precious bodily fluids as I speak, and I thank people for going out and getting me this coffee. I'm on radio, so if I drink it silently, you don't know I'm drinking it. If I make the sounds, if I dramatize the drinking of my coffee, you get an idea. One, of how sense of how I'm, you know, how much I'm enjoying it, and the fact that I'm really doing it. This is another thing about radio, and I tell you this all the time. And I'll tell you again if you've not heard it all the time. People keep saying, "Why don't you hook up to this cam thing?" And do, you know, Fatboy Lonergan does that. You get yourself a camera and say, let us watch you. You don't want to watch my head. You want to listen, and you don't really have to watch me talking. That's just stupid. More stupid. And then it's not radio. It's some kind of television, talking head. My coffee is black as hell, strong as death, and bitter as a fried grasshopper's leg. But boy, is it. You don't know anybody you listen to on the radio that does that on a microphone. You say, oh, yeah, you're just trying to be. I'm not trying to be different. I am different. That's the deal. Remember that. And it's okay. Let's get back to Brandon's story here, because we're talking about how quickly humans are evolving. I haven't read this. I'm reading this for the first time. But let's see if Brandon actually gives us some examples, because we talked all this time about many things. But when it came to the subject here, we're talking about how quickly it's changing. What's it changing into what? What is it changing into? Human populations grew exponentially in the last several thousand years, an explosion that sent people into previously uncolonized, or in many cases, in areas where the previous inhabitants were freshly exterminated. Evolutionary theory suggests that colonization's dynamics favor traits that enable newcomers to gain a fast, firm foothold. And what better way to do that than by having lots of children and having them fast? In what may be the most recent evidence of human evolution ever detected, the average age of first birth among mothers in a Quebec island town, a town in a Quebec island, dropped from 26 to 22 between 1800 and 1940. 1800 and 1940, 140 years. The town's moms didn't simply have a chance to give birth earlier. They seemed to have changed biologically over time. The tendency to reproduce at an early age and the large families that resulted would have been useful on the frontier. But what happens when frontier is replaced by industrial-aged urbanity? So in the old days, lifespans were shorter, families were bigger, and so women became mothers earlier. We tend, in this day and age, to not think about that. Now we live in what Brandon accurately called in the territory of civilization's graces. Homes, modern medicine keeps us going, so we're okay. We've got heat, we've got electricity, we've got comforts that were not in the frontier. They were not, and even further, even though they had homes and log cabins and stuff, but, you know, we have food, we have water that's cleansed. We have all these, and I love that term, civilization's graces, because this is what happens when people get together in a civilization and create the sense of community that we have. Even, and you could be, it's so great that you could be isolated inside the community, as I am. I think about that all the time. I'm in a community. I'm not that far from mankind. I mean, mankind's everywhere. But I live out in the country, and I'm not near the teeming traffic of the madding crowd. I'm not there. And other people that are in there, but even people that are there. So you could be even isolated inside of this. But because of civilization's graces, not only can people live with these with these graces, and the heat, the food, the availability of, to transport themselves, move around, to all of this, they can do it on top of one another. Apartment buildings. Look at, and they could work on top of one another, floor upon floor upon floor upon floor. In a very small area, thousands of people can live, and they have civilization's graces. So there's no frontier there. The frontier's all in the head, you know? So to reproduce at an early age was more conductive is like conductive. Conductive, can you come here a second? We need some pillows in these seats. It's more conducive to, now you don't have to, you know, because the children, when they grow up, they used to work on the farm. They became workers in the family. And then, you know, mothers had lots of them. You had to do it early. Mother's not going to have a kid at like 30. What are you, nuts? In those days, that was like old. Okay, so now we go on. Analysis of the Framington Heart Study. I've never heard of this, but apparently there is a Framington Heart Study. It's a long-term research project on the residents of one Massachusetts town that started in 1948. And study has involved more than 10,000 people. Yeah, because I'm going to move away from the mic. More than 10,000, I mean, don't do that. Stay with the mic. This, 1948, this town in Massachusetts, the Framington Heart Study. I imagine we're talking about Framington. I think we're talking about Framington, Massachusetts. It's involved more than 10,000 people. This study suggests that reproductive traits continue to evolve. Now, I don't really understand what that has to do with what we just talked about. But the fact that there are less people being born, there are more people that we're evolving faster. See, I don't get that, but we're going to read on and see. Here, Framingham, I'm sorry. I'm making up this name as I see it in my head. Do you do that with words? You know, they used to do that with names and stuff when I was a kid. And adults used to just, they saw something, and whatever they saw, that's what they said, and they didn't care what was correct, whether proper names of towns and cities or anything. Just said it, and that was it. And so you grew up saying it incorrectly. It's Framingham. The Framingham Heart Study. Framingham women are, on the average, able to give birth slightly earlier and later than their recent ancestors were able to give birth. You get that? They can do it slightly earlier and later. So when I said before you don't have a kid when you're 30, the mother, and it'll become a mother when you're 30 in those days, in frontier days, now you might want to have but you can. You can do it at 55, and you can do it earlier, which means you can do it at 12. because evolution is making it possible for younger girls to have the tools, the inner tools. Did I say tools? I don't know what else to call them. The innards, their innards are ready to be able to reproduce. Because some physical traits tend to be associated with fertility, Framingham should also be slightly shorter and stouter with lower cholesterol levels. Do you believe this? This is amazing. The Framingham Heart Study is showing that people in this town, they can have kids, the women can have kids younger or later than ever before. And the physical traits of all these people associated, because of their fertility, and that is a large is the wrong, a wide, a long span of ability to reproduce from, let's say, 13 to 55 or 60 even. That's long. But because that fertility exists, Framingham should be, women, is it women? Physical traits, Framingham should also be slightly shorter and stouter and have lower cholesterol. Imagine that. Oh, can you? I mean, I can't even imagine. I don't really understand that from a scientific point of view, but that's wild. For nearly all of human history, for nearly all the history of a lineage that started, you ready for this, 85 million years ago with this shrew-like furball and ended with us, milk was consumed in infancy. Milk. We talked about a long time ago, and I realized it was actually a stupid joke. I thought it was a joke at first. If you think, who was the first person to look at a cow and say, hey, I got to put me and look there and go, I'm going to lay down and put my mouth on these things that are hanging from the cow's belly and suck on it. And that sounds funny, but it's actually, it makes sense because, I mean, it would make sense that they would realize that the mother, the cow, is a cow, is a, and a cow is a female, okay? So let's get that straight. Don't give me this. Remember that commercial where they showed the bull was a cow? They didn't understand that a cow is a cow and they called the bull a cow. You remember that? These are people don't know what they're talking about. What I'm saying is this. Early man knew that a mother would give milk, okay, from her breast to the child. So he realized, she realized, it realized, the human realized that the animals were doing the same thing. Because remember, man in the beginning, those kind of men, they were animals. I mean, they weren't like, you know, they weren't civilized. They didn't live in Framingham. They didn't live anywhere. They didn't live among civilization's graces. The genetic process involved in breaking down lactase, I guess that's how you say it, lactase is how you say it in science. In science! Milk's main sugar shut down when babies finished weaning. Always, 85 million years of what we know as a human, and milk was always there. Milk! Maybe that's why they call it the perfect food. And yet, there's too much calcium in there. Milk will help you develop kidney stones. But look, let's not go to that particular negative side of the milk thing. Let's look at it. By the way, there's no milk in that coffee. Okay, so that's 85 million years of that. Okay, about 9,000 years ago, cattle were domesticated for the first time, offering great advantage to anyone who could take sustenance from their milk. Lactose processing began. So it was, oh, we can get milk, we could use cow milk. And you got to wonder, now I got to wonder, and I don't know the history of this, why cow milk? Why not squirrel milk? Well, I guess squirrels were harder to capture and domesticize, for one. Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a quart of milk out of my hat. So cows, they used cow milk, and they lactose processing mutations spread fast and wide, first in North Central Europe and later in Africa. And in the Attila the Hun days, they did not have this kind of milk. Couldn't go to the store and get yourself a quart of milk. There was no store. Once the Cossacks ran through Rome, what was there? There weren't even fiddles because Nero burned with the instruments. The majority of humankind is now lactose tolerant, not intolerant, tolerant, making these mutations among the fastest spreading known in human history. So being able to mutate and be able to use, consume, be nurtured by processed milk, even though the milk has been around there forever. And even though, well, women still produce milk in their breasts. Last I heard, that was still going on. And I remember from having children, my wife had that. And I know there are other ones out there who are wives or not wives. They have to have kids. And, you know, I can't even narrow any of that down these days. We have not, my estimation is we have not only evolved, we've evolved and continue to evolve consciously also in other ways. But let's go on with this. It's easy to think that evolution has a purpose, that it optimizes design in some predictable, self-evidently appealing way. But on the grand scale, though that is probably true, evolution filled a dead, ammonia-choked earth with biological processes that run on water and sunlight and should keep going for the next few billion years. Let me read that again. This makes up for every sentence I didn't understand. I'm underlining it. This makes up for every sentence in this article that I didn't understand or I misinterpreted or I read incorrectly. Listen to this. Oh, I didn't do the whole thing here. I didn't underline the whole thing. Do the whole thing. On a grand scale, evolution filled a dead, ammonia-choked earth with biological processes that run on water and sunlight and should keep going for the next billion years. That's the grand scale. On a narrower scale, evolution's outcomes aren't necessarily for the better. They might even be for the worse. Now we're going to get into that side of it. First, I'm going to tell you, my name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of the show. You're listening to Cotolo Chronicles. I'm Cotolo. I'm chronicling. And we do this as many times as we can live every week, Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our friends in England are listening either on Sunday nights. You can hear it on Tyne Radio in Great Britain, Tyne FM, great station. And you can hear us every day, weekday, I believe, True Talk Radio. I think it's .net, is it? TrueTalkRadio.net. Twice a day. This, you have no excuse if you want to hear the show or get into it again or understand it. I don't know if anybody will ever understand it, but I mean, you'll be able to hear it, take notes, go back into it, or if there are little gems inside of it that you want to take out and use in your life, you have no excuse. We're on all over the place. And then we appreciate all the stations who rebroadcast it. But we're live here at SRN Media Works, SRN 1. And to listen live, you go to www.148.ca/1, O-N-E. When you get to that page, you click listen. 148. You know, no, wait a second. You don't even need W's on that, do you? http://:// You don't even need W's. 148.ca, which is also a great website, and you could read some funny stuff and things that I have written on that website, because I have my own little area there. I also have Tumblr, cotolo.tumblr.com. Everybody knows about Tumblr now, T-U-M-B-L-R. Everybody knows about that because so many of you, millions of people have Tumblr accounts. You could also get me a Twitter and Tumblr. Twitter at Frank Cotolo. Don't put a space in between. You know, I realized that the other day when I was looking at my Twitter account. I was looking at somebody else's Twitter account. I don't have a space between Frank and Cotolo. There's no space. That's Cotolo over there. You know what I mean? And this show, which you can hear and you can read about, Frank Cotolo, CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com. And you'll get that also, that information on Facebook. If you want to be my friend over there, although I have to wait, I don't know when my ban is over. I have no idea why I was banned for 2 or 3 weeks or something, 40 days, I don't know, whatever it was. I'm sorry, can't make friends. And I've got a lot of requests for friends all the time based on this show. And I can't do anything about it because they banned me because they say that I went and asked for friends that I don't know. Excuse me, I didn't know that was part of the policy. You think I'm going to sit, and I was one of the first at least 10,000 people on Facebook. You think I ever sat back and read the conditions? Who reads the conditions? You know those things where they say, I agree with? No one reads that junk. It's just like nobody listens to the commercials. They go to the band. Nobody reads that junk. Look, is this going to get me further? Can I go to the next step if I click I agree or put that little check and put my mouse and click? Then, okay, I'll move on. I have no idea why this policy is. Don't ask. Do you know this person? If you don't know this person, don't be their friend. Do people complain? I could understand the policy, but I didn't know it was dominant. I didn't know it prevailed, and I didn't know there were penalties. I do know that there are some radio people I want to punch in the nose. I'm sorry. I was distracted again. Let's go back to now the narrower scale, why evolution's outcomes aren't necessarily for the better, as we talk about Brandon Keem's article. Well, we're not talking about his article. The surprising ways humans continue to evolve. Have we found any surprising ways? Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, such stuff is not so obvious to me. It's not like, you know, like I said, in the science fiction novels. Hey, you know, everybody's head's getting bigger because their brains are getting bigger. That's stupid. That's just, you know, not stupid. I mean, it's fiction. Fiction is not stupid. It's funny sometimes. It's good. It makes sense. It's exciting. But by the same token, these are subtle changes. And as I said, as he said, and as we agreed, because why should we disagree? Let's look at the narrower scale. Evolution's outcomes aren't necessarily for the better. How? Let's look at human intelligence. Here we go. This is the best part. I didn't read this. I don't know. But now we're going to go into the dumpth. D-U-M-P-T-H. A word created by Steve Allen, who wrote that book. One of the last books he wrote before he died. Dumpth. I think it's called Dumpth. Now I'm second guessing myself. How is this species getting dumber? What's with human intelligence? Well, see what it says here. According to geneticist Gerald Crabtree, I swear this is his name. I don't know why that has always been a funny name for me. Probably because when I was growing up, the Little Rascals... The little Rascals episodes. And his teacher, Mrs. Crabtree. Are you writing this stuff down? Because you could see them. You could see Mrs. Crabtree from the 1920s. I didn't grow up in the 20s, but I mean, these are the things we were watching when TV was new. Mrs. Crabtree. She was actually very attractive for that time. But that's where that name was introduced to me. This guy's name. So they're really our names, Crabtree, but they used it because it's funny. And it is funny. And I'm sorry, Gerald. Gerald Crabtree is from Stanford University. According to him, and he studies genetics, humanity is, for reasons involving the genetic architecture of intelligence and the nature of modern life, becoming emotionally and intellectually dumber. Dumber. Now, you can't be intellectually dumber. You're either, you have intellect, which means you have, I don't want to look them up now. I'm not going to go into the definitions of these things. The point is that you're smart or you're dumb. We're not getting smarter, he's saying. He's saying, Mr. Crabtree, the geneticist, and he's not only Dr. Crabtree, he's Mr. Crabtree. For reasons involving genetic architecture of intelligence, how the genes, the mutations are working, he says, emotionally and intellectually dumber. Why do we separate those? Because there is no connection between that. You could be the most incredibly smart person in the world, but your emotions don't match. It'd be wonderful if you could bridge that gap. Any psychologist will tell you that. Maybe not any. I don't know. I say things and I say them like people. I don't ever want to say anything like those other people on the radio who say this is the way it is definitely. I don't know these definitely. I'm just saying many would say that. Emotionally and intellectually, there's a gap. He says that we as a species reached a peak several thousand years ago, we became as smart as we, and then as we were ever were smart, the smartest, we became the smartest. Our species was never smarter. And then, meow, that's a sound I'm making like a plane, meow, diving. Meow. I don't know why that's a diving sound. You go from high to low. You go from high to low. You ever notice that? I don't know, ever since I was a kid, that's what they do. You go from high to low. That means you're coming down. I don't know why that, but anyway. Several thousand years ago, to be sure, this is just a hypothesis unsupported by data, and it has received much criticism. But even if Mr. Crabtree is wrong, this argument makes for an enjoyable read. I quote, "A hunter-gatherer who did not correctly conceive a solution to providing food or shelter probably died, along with his or her progeny." He wrote this. Mr. Crabtree wrote this in a copy of Current Biology. And I quote again, "Whereas a modern Wall Street executive that made a similar conceptual mistake would receive a substantial bonus and be a more attractive mate." See? That's considered... There's a matter of stupidity involved in that. There's something dumb about that. Well, we don't exactly smell worse. Now we're going to move on. Is that it? Yeah. Wow. That's it for dumbing? You know, you could think about these things in these sections. Think about being emotionally. We know a lot more about ourselves. If you listen to the show with Dr. Popoli, the shows with Dr. Popoli, we know a lot more about ourselves and our behavior through studies. If you listen to our shows with Dr. Waldor, who will be on again one of these days, if you listen to those shows, you'll know that we are learning so much more about ourselves at the smallest relationship. I mean, to the universe and to infinity. We're learning more about that intellectually, emotionally. You know we are. And yet, what is happening? You can be the judge of this with your own study. If you become aware of this, not just yourself, think about yourself. Let's think about that, as I said in the beginning of the show. If you were listening to the video, if you weren't, I'm not going to say it again. I don't know what to tell you. I have to go back and listen to it. But at your impressionable age, when adults are these all-knowing, all huge creatures of knowledge and everything, because they do things that you would like to do, or get into a big metal machine and move it and drive it and, you know, put food into, be able to create wonderful dinners from raw food, and all the things that adults do, which are second nature to adults, but are to kids, are just remarkable. It's magic, absolute magic. And think about, have you gotten more, you know, I was going to say something horrible, more smarter. Have you, something people would have said, I mean, my mother would have said that, and she would have said, you know, you're more smarter than you were. No. Have you gotten smarter, or have you gotten dumber. Just think of your own evolution. That's how you put all this into perspective. And then think about the immediate people. Watch them. Be aware of the immediate people around you. These are the people that you come in contact with. These are the people that influence your behavior. These are the people that ignite your emotions. These are the people that launch your actions in many ways, because you reflect upon them, whether you work with them, you live with them, whoever are these people. Look at them and think about their evolution and think about your own evolution in the span of your life. I don't think I'm dumber, to use that expression. But I don't, because I don't think I ever was smart, see. Like anyone has ever read anything. Oh, by the way, let me mention this here as we move along. Now, there's a wonderful review of Molotov Memoirs coming out. It's going to be, I'll link to it on the blog, on any other blogs. I'll link to it on Facebook. I'll do the whole social media junk so that you can read it, and then maybe you will again consider buying it in digital or analog form. I'll be telling you more about that as time goes on. My evolution has brought me to the point, as I said, where I'm still affected by somebody saying to me now, life's a bitch and then you die. Encapsulating, is that the word? Capsulizing, is that the word? Just putting into one little small package, that's a phrase that works. The brief struggle of life and where it goes. That's it. And in a sense, that's beautiful. But it's not a smart thing. And I'm not particularly happy about how it affects me, because I was a child when somebody brought to my attention this philosophy: life is a bitch, and then you die, which means then it's over. So it doesn't say anything about smile. Well, smile, once in a while, you'll get a great bowl of Rice Krispies. You know, that doesn't say that. Once in a while, the milk will be the exact temperature that you want. Once in a while, you'll just look up at the sun on a day after it's been cold and you'll go, not bad. Those moments that you need to embrace. No, they don't think that. They didn't say any of these things. They didn't even say there'd be moments of joy. They said, life's a bitch, and then you die. Okay. Which, if that's not dumb, because it's such a focused, it's a myopic view of so many, many things that make up life, no less emotionally and intellectually. But again, Mr. Crabtree here from the Stanford University. Good old Jerry Crabtree. Hey, what happened to Jerry? Imagine his friends in college. What happened to Jerry Crabtree? Jerry Crabtree? He's over at Stanford University. You're kidding. No, he's doing all that gene stuff. Gene stuff? Why? He's in pants? No. I mean, he does genetic. You know, he looks at blood. He looks at blood. He looks at DNA and stuff. What does DNA stand for anyway? I don't know. I have no idea. So anyway, that's what they're talking about, those people. But Jerry had talked about this stuff and wrote about it in Current Biology. So there's a downside, he feels, to evolution. So what he's saying, I think, and I'm not going to speak for him, but I mean, in general, what Jerry Crabtree is insinuating to me, how I'm understanding it, is that he's saying civilization's graces have, in a sense, made us lazy. And I don't know about that, because if you got more time to read and more time to study and more time to develop your intellect than the frontier man, I mean, the frontier man gets up in the morning and gets on before the sun rises and has to go out and feed the chickens, get the milk. They have to do all this stuff. They can't run down to the store. They don't go down to Bohack. There is no more Bohack. They don't go down to Giant. What is the name of the place? What is the name? Why do these places change from state to state? You ever notice that? There are these chains of big stores and supermarkets. One time they weren't supermarkets. It was a store on the corner. I remember the A&P was the first supermarket, the Atlantic and Pacific. It was called the A&P. And then, you know, poor Irving, who had the grocery store down. But these doesn't matter. The point is, if you watch these old cowboy movies and you see the general store, you know, it's a great representation of a general store or a store with a, there's two of them. One of them is in a movie called Shane, and another one is in a movie called Open Range. When they, you see people buying in this general store. Well, they had that in the Frontier and those, well, they didn't have it in, you didn't have time. There's so much you had to do yourself. You didn't have civilization's graces. So much you had to do for yourself. You didn't have time to work on your intellect. You just were always doing perfunctory things. I looked for a word better than things, and I didn't find it. Now, how about smelling? Do we smell better? Brandon says we don't exactly smell worse. Not in the hold-your-nose sense, but check this out. There's reason to think our sense of smell has ossified. Yes, there has been an ossification of our sense of smell. There's been smell ossification, whether you know it or not. Unlike most animals, we no longer rely on the sense of smell to make crucial everyday decisions. That's true. You don't wake up in the morning and go, it smells like I shouldn't go to work. It smells like I don't want to eat. Smells like, you don't use this. What do you use a sense of smell anyway? I think for joy, because you taste things. Taste and smell goes together. I knew a guy, his father had no sense of smell. I know I'm running out of time. I know I'm probably not going to finish this whole thing. But then again, who could finish this? It can't be finished. I'll get as far as I can get. Think about this. No sense of smell means you can't taste. So you go to a Chinese, where are we going to go tonight? Ernie? Let's say his name was Ernie. It wasn't. Where are we going to go tonight? Let's go to a Chinese restaurant. Why would Ernie care? Because if he can't smell, he has no sense of taste, he can't smell. They work together. It's not like emotional and intellectual, which work apart and once in a while come together, and that's a brilliant moment. So what does he care where he eats? Let's have Italian tonight. Who cares? This guy could walk into an opium den. Are there still opium dens? There must be. And what? He could get high and not even know it because he's smelling this stuff. This guy could walk into a locker room in a really horrible, I mean, it's a real, there's no good locker room. Every locker room I've ever been in from school stinks. The stench, you wish you did not have the sense of smell. You hold your nose. You don't want to smell. Because, you know, one person's sweat is bad enough. Let's get a group of people together and really mix up that sweat. That stench. Oh, God, I hated it. I hated, in high school, you have to go into the locker room and you have to change. They didn't even let us take showers in those. We had to go the rest of the day stinking in our clothes. But you'd go in there and it was like, oh my God. You didn't want to have the sense of smell. But the guy, Ernie, who didn't have a sense of smell, what did he matter? He could go in there. He could go in there with takeout Chinese food. Think about this. You would be able to go without smell. You'd be able to go into a locker room where 25 men stink like the mountains of India. Like I know the mountains of India stink. What do I know? But I mean, like dead tigers and things are all over. Dead things and stuff. You know, it's India. I mean, the Ganges stinks. I know that for a fact. Somebody, but anyway, he could go in to a locker room, that stench of human sweat and perspiration, and he could eat in a bowl. He would eat chop suey. Could you imagine this? Anything. He could eat spare ribs. It doesn't matter. It didn't even matter. It'd be a big bowl of ravioli. It could be anything. It could be exquisite French cuisine. What does it matter? He can't smell. He can't taste. It might as well just be dirt or some. He has texture. So he knows, he doesn't know the difference between putting a shrimp in his mouth, or let's say a big thick fillet of cod in his mouth, as opposed to a steak that's cooked very much like the texture of cod. He doesn't know the difference. So what's happened to smell? But it's true, we don't use smell to make any crucial decisions. Smells like I shouldn't drive today. Imagine that. I'm not going to drive today. It just doesn't smell like I should drive. Doesn't say. But cave-dwelling fish. Cave-dwelling fish? Cave-dwelling fish. Gradually lose their no longer necessary sense of sight. I didn't know that fish dwelled in caves. Evidence suggests that mutations impairing our sense of smell have accumulated. Okay, well then let's forget about cave-dwelling fish. Is that a typo? I don't know. We'll have to get in touch with the editors. People, including the science journalist that wrote this piece, Brandon, tend to emphasize biology when thinking about human evolution, but that focus contains an element of looking for my keys under the streetlight reasoning. I had never heard of that kind of reasoning. Maybe it comes from a Sherlock Holmes book. Oh, I say, I'm looking for my keys under the streetlight reason. No, I don't know what that is. He's made that up. Nobody ever said to me, I'm looking for my keys under the streetlight. But this is how he's explaining it. Genetic evolution can be rigorously measured and quantified. So you don't have to look. It's there. The science is there. Cultural evolution, on the other hand, is messy and difficult to study. You can't do it in journal appropriate ways. Yet in many ways, our culture, the social practices and institutions, including the all-important vehicle of language, which you have heard over the last 2 hours, completely decimated. No, it hasn't been decimated. I mean, I've said things and I spoke correctly. It hasn't been decimated, but the language and where I've gone with it and how my thought is gone shows you the hunger for intellectualism as opposed to getting dumber, because that's what we're trying to find out. But it's more powerful than biology, what we're doing to communicate. Communication's important. Now, some people would say, so while you do that thing you do on Thursday night to communicate? I don't need to. I know. I don't know why. And I don't have to have a reason. I forgot what I called them. Big bone fatty. Fatkins. I forgot what I called them. Laden double folded stomach man. I don't know what I called them. I forgot. All right, let's finish this article as we're rapidly coming to where we have to. Oh, we have a signal. Come on. I hate to steal. I'm telling you that. You know what's happened? Oh, let's see if this is. Yeah, we got. We see now. We have to fight time and electronics, which have shut down the screen telling me the time. That's okay. If we run a little over time, that's fine. We're just gonna wait for my. this is civilization's graces. Okay, my wireless. Many of you who listen to the show know this. When I do it live, my wireless. I become powerless wireless when my boiler is going to go on because the electronic impulses. Do I need to explain this? Because no one could explain this. Electronic impulses take over the very fields of magnetism. I'm not making up this because this is what they told me. The currents that, and always at the most inappropriate time, not always, but many times. Okay. So I can't even tell you that the theme's going to start at any given time. I know we're somewhere. Everybody just listen. I have the floor, and it won't take that much longer. But we've gone black, and I know we have a signal, because everything's on. In the last decade. Okay, wait, hold on, let's read the last couple of things here, and hope for the, we'll hear the boiler kick on. And we'll be able to turn on the screen and see exactly what we're doing time-wise. I know. I can't even click the theme because I have no control. I'm like the in Outer Limits. We control the volume. We control. You don't even know what I'm talking about, Outer Limits. Look it up. Write it in your book. Let's wait for the thing and I'll read this. We could travel back in time a few hundred thousand years. Homo sapiens would be quite recognizable. It's culture that truly distinguishes us. This is the important thing, and I didn't read this from the beginning, but now we know. This is exactly what I say every week. I don't know if I'm right, but I say it. That's why we look at pop, and it's all popular. Popular culture. Pop culture stands for popular culture. And civilization's graces fall into play, and so does the whole digital revolution. So does the fact that regardless of digital revolution, I'm stuck with the There it goes. Now we're going to find out. We're probably going to have to go. There we are. How are we doing, Tom? Oh, my God, we got to get out of here. It's like, listen, I got to tell you this much, my friends. Who is that? Oh, no, we're...
That's Spatola over
know,
there.
He's
you know what I mean?
I know. We're completely out of it now. Oh, no, hold on. We do have like 30 seconds, 40, 20 seconds. My name is Frank Catone. The man whose name adorns the title of the show. Let's get out of here for now. Evolve. Go on. Evolve. Do what you got to do. And remember what I said. Good night, Mrs. Ursula, wherever you are. I'll be back. I have nothing more to say.